working with value networks. Innovations are a multiplayer game. That image of the lone hero innovator is a myth. Even celebrated soloists like Thomas Edison or James Watt had their army of assistants working away behind the scenes. Alexander Bell wouldn't have been able to bring the telephone to life without being able to demonstrate the device by having Mr. Watson on the other end of the line when he famously told him to come in from the next room, Mr. Watson. Ask any entrepreneur and they'll tell you about the networks they needed to bring their ideas to life. Creating a valuable solution isn't a simple bing light bulb moment. It's a complicated journey, drawing in resources, ideas, time and energy, not to mention money. Most of it coming from other people. Deconstruct any successful startup and you soon have a cast of characters on stage taking their bows as the audience recognize the shared creativity which has made the performance possible. And once we get beyond the initial pilot, the hard work really begins. That journey to scale is a tough one. It takes time and involves negotiating some uncertain conditions on the way. The evidence is very clear. It's a team effort and it needs plenty of external help. Complementary assets is the technical term for the answer to the question of who else and what else do you need to scale your innovation. And the key point about complementary assets is that they lie beyond what you can bring to the party. By their nature, they represent resources you need to find and then work with. The trick is in assembling suitable partnerships to deliver them. That's something we've known for a long time. Consider Welsh entrepreneur Price Jones, way back in 1860. He used a mail order model to connect his woolen goods business to a wider market, building on the nascent logistics and communication infrastructure of postal services and railways. The offer was simple. Place your order via mail and it will be delivered the next day, effectively anticipating Amazon Prime by about 150 years. His idea paid off by the 1880s, he had an international operation, counting amongst his partners the royal houses of Austria, Britain, Denmark, Germany, Hanover, Italy, Naples, and Russia. Importantly, he inspired others, like Messrs. Sears and Roebuck, to extend and refine the model. They used their catalogue to bring ever more exotic goods to the doorsteps of the most far-flung farm or homestead right across the United States. But theirs wasn't a single component innovation. To make it work, they needed to build an ecosystem. Selling was only part of the story. Realizing their value proposition depended on paying attention to a host of other elements, complementary assets. Things like capturing and processing orders, procuring stock, storage, distribution, handling logistics over a large area, and managing cash flows so that they'd have the money up front in order to fund the whole operation. It was like a giant jigsaw puzzle, and it took them a couple of years before they managed to wrestle the right pieces into place. Above all, they were smart enough to recognize that they didn't need to own or control everything as long as they could orchestrate and coordinate it. They built the platform and then partnered with a host of players, like domestic appliance makers, finance houses, and shipping companies to create a win-win model in which everyone was able to take a share in the rapidly growing market. From dolls to power tools, bicycles to fur coats, seeds to automobiles, the model linked millions of people in a market square the size of a continent. And it was a platform on which innovation flourished. Once the basic model was established, it became a breeding ground for new goods and services, new ways of creating and providing value. Now, scaling innovations like these is far from a solo act. It's putting together a group of entities which can work together to create shared value at scale. But value networks don't just happen. They involve three key challenges: finding, forming, and performing. Working out the who else and what else do we need question isn't simply a matter of creating a shopping list. You've got to find the relevant players and make sure you're not missing any. And then you've got to find ways of bringing them alongside, engaging them as partners with a stake in helping you create the shared value you seek. And finally, you have to orchestrate the whole. Engage them so that together they deliver emergent properties, something which is greater than the sum of the parts. So, how do you go about working with value networks to deliver innovation at scale? Well, there are multiple potential partners, but we found it useful to think about some key complementary roles which are usually played. First, you need to think about your bookends. Now, these represent you as a value creator and the consumer for whom you're trying to create it, bookending the process. But it also involves others who form part of that creation process and who are also looking to capture some kind of value from doing so, whether it's financial or experience or learning or reputation or whatever. Movers do what the name suggests. They help move value around the system you're creating. They may be passive channels, something like the internet, or in those early days of mail order, the embryonic postal service. Passive, yes, but without them, you might be in trouble. Conveyors are more active, giving impetus to your innovation, spreading the word, helping convince adopters. And then there are coordinators, enabling the whole to operate. Think, for example, of the ways in which today's platform businesses act as coordinators to bring different creators and consumers together. And shapers, they're the third group. They basically set out the space within which you can operate your value network. Competitors can't be ignored, and competition comes in many different forms, from head-on challenges to other ways in which you might find your innovation fighting for resources or attention. Cartographers are the ones who set the rules of the game. They mark out the playing field, generally shape the way in which value can be created and shared. And complementers influence the value, providing necessary positive or sometimes negative input to shape the environment in which your innovation is trying to scale. Now, your value network is going to involve a combination of entities, people, organization, and resources, which span these 9 core roles. Cue the need for a simple checklist when you begin thinking about scaling your innovation. Can you map who you need and what you already have in terms of the roles they play in your value network? But having mapped your value network, you need to think about working with it, how to get it to perform, engaging different players in different ways. It's not just assembling pieces on the chessboard, but the moves you make with them that's going to make the difference. Not least because you're unlikely to be able to control them or order them about. To switch analogies, your role isn't really that of a conductor creating something wonderful by coordinating all the players in an orchestra. No, your band is full of players who may have their own ideas and their own agendas. They may not always want to play by the score in front of them. So it's more like a jam session in a jazz group with extensive improvisation and depending on listening and aligning with each other. And it's here that life gets even more complicated for 2 reasons. First of all, entities in your value network may well play more than one role at the same time. Think of an educational technology innovation designed to enhance learning in schools. Now, scaling that will almost certainly involve ministries of education, acting as the cartographers, setting out education policies, rules, and regulations. But they may also be conveyors, actively promoting your approach and enabling connections to school, becoming value captors, sharing in the overall value of enhancing learning across the population. And conveyors may also be co-creators, not only getting your value solution to where it's needed and accelerating adoption, but also creating new value alongside it. Brownie Wise played a key conveyor role in the scaling of Tupperware as an innovation, but she and her team were also a key source of product design and improvement ideas. And roles also change over time, and this opens up considerable opportunity in terms of shaping the way the value network evolves. For example, Lego moved from being a creator of toys to engage with many of their consumers to capture and use their ideas for future products, effectively recruiting consumers to be co-creators. In similar fashion, competitors can become value captors, helping grow a market in which they also operate. Amazon, for example, supplies the infrastructure on which Netflix has been able to build its streaming. As a result, both Prime and Netflix have benefited from their shared learning about growing the streaming market. To stay with our jazz ensemble metaphor, it's as if different players are also multi-instrumentalists and can bring their different instruments to bear, which brings with it the potential for some amazing emergent properties, but also could result in a seriously unpleasant cacophony. So once again, it raises some key checklist questions as you think about scale. In particular, how roles might change, which players in your network might play multiple roles, and how you might act to engage and align them over time. Now, one way to help this strategic planning process is to think about spheres of influence, what we term your inner value network and your outer value network. The inner value network represents those entities you need to keep close. Typically, this includes not only your consumers, but also captors, the partners you need to create shared value, and key conveyors. Now, you need to keep them close and engage with them in ways which represent a formal relationship, contracts, partnership agreements, and so on. Your outer value network represents those entities typically outside your direct control or influence. They may be the channels which are available to you to work with, or the cartographers who make the rules within which you have to operate, for example, government regulations or trade standards. The important thing here is to remind ourselves that roles can change, so there's potential for drawing players in the outer value network closer, making them part of our inner value network. For example, working with consumers as co-creators, drawing on their ideas and engaging them as partners in the way that Lego has done. GIFGAF is a small but highly successful player in the tightly competitive world of mobile phone networking. And its excellent customer service record is in no small measure down to the way in which it's engaged its community of consumers to play the role of creating customer service. Or you might work alongside regulatory bodies, building active partnerships to help promote adoption. Now, mobile money is still an active new field for apps and hardware players, but it's really been a reality in East Africa for over a decade. M-Pesa has been a transformational innovation and has scaled around the world. But its early success depended critically on the support of the central bank, rather than its opposition to newcomer ideas. It helped create a fertile regulatory landscape within which mobile money could develop and scale. Cartography in action. And the world of entertainment, innovators behind films, books, music, they've also realized the power of fandom as a resource to help scaling, partnering with communities of consumers who represent also key complementers. Think about the role played by communities around movie series like Star Wars, with its conventions, costumes, and huge now online presence. This isn't directly controlled by the film companies, but instead exists alongside it, complementing the rate and direction of development and helping create new characters and backstories, things which will feed into the core. Now, when things go wrong, as they sometimes will, and the road you travel stays all uphill? Well, these could well be the description of an innovation team's frustration as they try to scale. But they are actually the lyrics from a successful blues offering by Canned Heat, released over 50 years ago. It's still a great song, and it still has some powerful advice for those travelers trying to make it up that scaling hill. going on to remind them that together we stand, divided we fall. And the chorus of the song really sums it all up. The key to scaling innovation is simple. Let's work together. The challenge, of course, is figuring out how.